Are we recording?
You're listening to
Source News
on 4EB Community Radio, presented by Griffith University students.
Hello, Brisbaneites, Gold Coasters, and everyone in between. Welcome to the Source News, coming at you from Griffith University's Southport campus on this lovely Thursday, the 1st of August. Before we get into it, let's introduce ourselves. My name is Aiden.
Alongside him, it's Blake.
With Cooper.
And Ben.
We have a huge show for you all this afternoon. I'll let Blake cover the headlines.
Thanks, Aiden. Today on the Source News, we cover whether the inclusion of the T20 cricket in the 2028 Olympics is good for the sport. We'll unpack the true cost of the Paris Olympics and hear what it means for the Brisbane Games, and hear about how Stage 3 of the GC Link tram impacts the daily transport of Gold Coast citizens. But first, we have the current cost of living crisis and how it is affecting the mental health of hospitality workers.
The following story contains the topic of mental health. If you or anyone you know is struggling with mental health issues, you can contact Lifeline on 131114. The current cost of living crisis is impacting all Australians, but it's those in hospitality who've been hit the hardest. Cooper Wakeham finds out more.
For many Australians, going to bars and restaurants with friends is a big part of life, but the current cost of living crisis has made this harder than ever. As a result, those working in and around hospitality have been hit harder than any other industry. Psychologist Lindley Casey has experienced the impact of this firsthand.
What I'm seeing just locally is that prices for businesses are going up extensively, whether it's electricity, whether it's food prices, whether it's cost of staff. So staff often get cut back. People aren't going out to eat as much at the moment as well. And I'm hearing, you know, people in terms of who I'm seeing that aren't spending as much money going out, aren't spending as much going to restaurants. And so I imagine that has a flow-on effect to hospitality in relationship to them keeping their job or not picking up shifts.
With many jobs in hospitality being impacted by the crisis, this then impacts the mental health of workers.
In general, not having enough money or not having a job, there'll be different things that are impacting an individual in regards to the cost of living crisis. So it may be some of their jobs affected or that they can't afford food or there's an increase in childcare issues. All of those issues create pressure and stress on individuals. More stress on individuals can lead to things like anxiety and depression, relationship issues, and all sorts of breakdown within the family home. But in general, just stress is not great for mental health.
As the cost of living crisis continues without an obvious solution in the near future, it is important for hospitality workers to understand how they can manage their mental health during these challenging times.
A, it's recognising it to start with, so it's acknowledging it, and then B, reaching out and asking for support through your network of friends and family, but also speaking to your local GP and then getting linked in with a psychologist or an online psychologist, and getting support early is what I would recommend.
Feeling the force of the crisis harder than anyone is restaurant owner Jodie Daly.
I live in a constant state of stress. I'm a very optimistic person and it's even starting to chip away at my optimism because you just sometimes can't see when it's going to get better. You're just constantly trying to fix it to keep going and make sure that you've got a business that can continue to run. I find stress is probably the worst and then you do start to get beaten down a bit energy-wise, not knowing how to fix it.
As the crisis wears on Jodie's mental health, it also has a flow-on effect on every aspect of her business.
Definitely have seen a downward impact on takings, which then affects rostering, then affects staff. It then affects me not ordering as much stock as I usually do, so that obviously affects my suppliers as well.
As Jodie continues to balance her business and her mental health, the hospitality industry as a whole continues to struggle in the face of the crisis.
There is multiple beautiful award-winning restaurants and chefs that are having to shut down. People just don't have the money to go out and spend on a sometimes luxury item.
As the industry struggles and businesses fight to stay alive, it's easy to overlook employees in hospitality. But it's these workers who face just as many challenges during this crisis.
The cost of living crisis
crisis has had quite a negative impact on me and my mental health, just because I'm getting a lot less work being in the hospitality industry. So it's really decreased the amount of income I've been able to get, which has made things like paying rent hard and means I have a lot less disposable income to do the things I enjoy, things like socialising and going out with friends.
That was William Carradus, a student and hospitality worker who is bearing the brunt of the crisis.
Definitely feels like a bit of extra stress just seeing my savings deteriorate. Like, I've started doing my own haircuts because they're just too expensive to go out and pay for. Even things like that affects my confidence too.
As the cost of living crisis continues to impact hospitality, it's more important than ever to reach out to those around you.
Thanks, Cooper, for that report. It's great to hear from those in the hospitality industry. It is so important to reach out to your friends and family during these tough times.
For the latest around Brisbane and the Gold Coast, you're listening to The Source News on 4EB Global Digital.
As you all know, we are 5 days into the 2024 Paris Olympics, and we are so excited to bring you all the results and the biggest highlights in the sports report coming up soon. We've been having a great time watching the Olympics from home, but how are people feeling about it in Paris? There's also been a lot of talk about how expensive the Olympic Games are getting, and it has some Queenslanders worried about what's going to happen when we host the Olympics in 2032. For all that and more, Ben Sleep has the story.
Ah, the Olympics. The quadrennial event where every country in the world throws their superhumans into one city to find out which ones come out on top. But the Olympics are so much more than the games. They're also the politics, the economics, the culture, and the people. This Olympics has been rife with controversy, from fake terror threats to modern-day satanic panic. But I wanted to cut through the noise and find a perspective on the games from a person who was actually from Paris, to find out how they really feel about the games.
So my name is Mariana Badi. I'm a French journalist student in Australia.
Did you watch the opening ceremony?
Yes, I did. I actually loved the representation of the French culture in the opening ceremony. Like, I feel like even the choice of artists, there were like a little bit of everything, like some metal rock group, like artists, some like more like rap, so some like Afrobeats artists. And they showed a lot of monuments as well, like Notre Dame, or like, I don't know, like there was so much like things that remind of the history of the country and like the diversity of it. And that's, I was happy about the ceremony.
She's right. The opening ceremony was crazy, featuring Lady Gaga, Celine Dion, and the body of Marie Antoinette holding her decapitated head, singing a 19th century French anthem while French heavy metal band Gojira played. It was over the top. It was extravagant, and it was expensive.
The cost for this year's Paris Olympics is $8.2 billion. $1.5 billion of that going towards a failed project to make the Seine River swimmable in time for the Olympics, which failed due to heavy rainfall that occurred last week. And it seems like a lot of people in Paris are quite unhappy.
I feel like the country has a lot of issues at the moment. So the Olympics being held, it felt for a lot of people that the money kind of from the government was put in the wrong spot. People around me, from my friends to my family members, are mostly talking about how it's gonna impact them. So like people driving are gonna talk about, oh, like some roads are being blocked, or like people taking public transport, the prices went very, very up. Like the monthly like pass that we have in France, the prices just went up crazy. And like even individual tickets for like a single trip, it's doubled. So people are more talking about that and how it's gonna impact them financially or like in their daily lives, instead of like the games themselves. I know that a lot of people, even prior to that, saying, oh, I need to find a way to be out of the city before the Olympics start. Everyone was just like, it's just going to be so messy.
So why do countries still try to bid for the host position? Is the inconvenience and the cost really worth it? And what's going to benefit us Queenslanders when we host the Brisbane Olympics in 2032? I spoke with the head of economics at Griffith University, Professor Alberto Poso, to find out.
Populist governments may choose to bid on games or World Cups and stuff like that during hard times to help people forget that we are going through hard times and get a political boost. So a government is going to be playing with the two, the financial real cost versus the political capital that holding the events can gain. And they'll be assessing the cost of one versus the benefit of the other. If I look at the data from all the Olympics ever, they always go above cost. For Queensland during the Brisbane Olympics, we know that some stadiums need to be revamped. We need better roads, better infrastructure. So those costs associated with that are going to be higher. The key question is, are there going to be long-term benefits from these expenses? And what we need probably the most in Southeast Queensland is good public transport. So we'll hopefully have that. Now, the infrastructure and public transport are actually really important for the long term of the economy. If done properly, the infrastructure in particular, is going to lead to long-term economic consequences by making it easier for people to, say, travel to work, as well as goods to reach market.
That's Professor Alberto Poso, finishing off that story for Ben Sleep.
As we tune into the Olympics in Paris, we can't help but get excited for the 2032 Games in Brizzy. Although it's only 8 short years away, some massive upgrades are coming to Southeast Queensland. Here's Griffith journalist Blake Thwaites reporting on some locals that are fed up with the tram extension on the Gold Coast.
Gold Coast Light Rail Stage 3 is a $1.2 billion, nearly 7-kilometre extension of the light rail network from Broadbeach to Burleigh Heads. The project is set to provide a major economic boost in the area. However, the ongoing construction is proving to be a nightmare for daily commuters. Major construction began in July 2022 and isn't due to finish until 2025. Leaving the Gold Coast Highway littered with roadworks, lane closures, and heavy congestion. Ruby Hopkinson is just one of many local commuters who is fed up with construction.
Oh, the traffic is an absolute nightmare. I feel like it's gone from 3 lanes down to 1, so everything is backed up. Takes double time to get anywhere. So I've definitely been trying to take alternate routes.
Congestion isn't Miss Hopkinson's only concern. She also finds the altered road conditions difficult to navigate.
Gosh, I think that there will be an increase in accidents because it's so hard to navigate the lanes. It's just orange cones everywhere and it's 40, but no one goes 40 and it's just extremely difficult. It's a nightmare.
Before construction began, community engagement surveys were undertaken in the area. Some of the feedback recorded was nearly 70% of participants wanted more public transport services, preferring light rail over bus. Another 86% of participants supported Stage 3 and wanted the extension to the Gold Coast Airport as soon as possible. The ongoing project has created an estimated 700 jobs for construction workers. One worker, Gregory Dell, understands the frustration of the public.
Well, it's an absolute mess at the moment. The reasons being that, the breaking it down from 2 lanes to 1 lane, and that does change regularly. So you find people, the people who don't use it, the highway that much, have been totally confused as to what's happening and what's going on.
Despite his concerns, Mr. Dell looks forward to the benefits the extension will provide.
Benefits, I suppose, you might get more people on the tram down to Burley rather than the traffic issues that are in Burley at the moment.
James Blackman is one local who sets to benefit from the extension. He currently lives in Miami and goes to university in Southport. Mr. Blackman would prefer to use public transport, but finds it quicker to drive his car.
Because I live in Miami, I then have to like kind of walk to the bus stop, get on the bus, get on the tram, what, an hour and a half, hour trip all up. Sometimes it's easy to jump in the car, 20 minutes.
So sit tight, Gold Coasters. There is light at the end of the traffic. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for that report, Blake. We can't wait to see the tram extension up and running.
Hey, what are you listening to?
The Source News.
Keeping up with the Olympics theme, it has been announced that the T20 cricket will be featuring in the 2028 Olympic Games in Los Angeles. Following the shorter format's successful introduction to the United States, some world-class players have raised questions about the future of Test cricket. Aidan Bognuda has the story.
Cricket is the lifeblood of so many countries around the world. In fact, cricket only trails soccer as the world's most popular sport, capturing the hearts and minds of over 2.5 billion people. Here in Australia, though, it is the Test cricket format that plays a huge role in Aussie culture. Whether it's watching iconic broadcasts on TV or playing out in the backyard, Test cricket has been a staple of Aussie childhoods for decades. Australian Test opening batter Joe Burns says the longer format was a crucial part in developing his love of the game.
Growing up as a kid through the 90s, Test cricket was huge. It's what we watched all summer on TV. There wasn't the Big Bash on every night. So as junior kids, a lot of the cricket that you play is based around, you know, the Test stars and Test matches and setting up kind of replica Test matches in your own environment. So it's a big part of people's childhood, and I think that's why it's so special this day and age. Just everyone's followed it for a long time.
And it isn't just us Aussies that inject Test cricket into our culture. Countries such as England, India, Pakistan, and even our neighbours in New Zealand have some of the best cricketing pedigree in the world. However, cricket hasn't yet blossomed in the sports mecca that is the United States. Until now. The recent T20 World Cup and Major League Cricket tournaments have taken the US by storm. Not only has this year's Major League season seen record fans in attendance, but it has also been announced that T20 cricket will feature in the 2028 Olympics in Los Angeles. However, this globalisation of T20 cricket has left the majority of fans and players fearing the death of Test cricket. Former Queensland and West Indies batter Brendan Nash says keeping Test cricket relevant while globalising the T20 format will be challenging.
To get cricket into some big nation like the USA, I think that bodes well. I think to get the game globalised in a way, but I think then the challenge becomes T20 is a great introduction, but how do we then also, you know, if it becomes something where it's picked up or followed in America, you know, how do we then introduce a longer version of the game to keep that going? Because fear is that be that market, it might only be a T20 sort of cricket following in the States, you know, like that sort of following. They might not ever be introduced to Test cricket or anything like that, just because it might be too challenging. You know, the Olympics is obviously another showcase piece as well, so it's obviously a huge sporting event, and it's going to be great that cricket is going to be in that for sure. And I think just T20, unfortunately, it's probably the easiest way to introduce a game globally to the different nations that have no idea about it. So it's sort of, you know, that shorter version. It's, you know, coloured clothing, there's music, there's everything, like it's entertainment for 3 hours. So I think that's a good introduction to get the game globalised. But the challenge then becomes to all the administrators is how we can keep Test cricket going.
With global T20 tournaments earning record revenues every year, less and less Test matches are being played. Nash says the rise of the T20 format is also damaging the quality of Test teams and players.
It's, you know, it's becoming more challenging for the different nations to put together a strong team to represent their nations. So that is a little bit sad to see, you know, with all the different franchise type opportunities for players now that, yeah, you know, those ones that might have been still having a bit of a hope and willingness to sort of play the longer version, that might have sort of died down a little bit within them.
However, Joe Burns says T20 cricket is making the game stronger than it's ever been before.
I really like the way the ICC is utilising that format. I just think that the growth of T20 has obviously taken a little bit of the attention away from Test cricket, but I think that's only in a good way. It's an exciting time for cricket globally. 2020 cricket's allowed us to access new markets around the world and new frontiers, and really excited for what the next 4 years holds, building into the Olympic Games.
Joe Burns finishing off that report by my co-host Aidan Bognuda. Definitely some different opinions out there by past and present players. I know you're a big cricket guy, Aidan. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think I'm definitely more on Brendan Nash's side. I think it's great that T20 cricket is getting spread around the world. But like Brendan, I consider myself to be a purist of the game. So, you know, hopefully Test cricket will soon catch fire in the US and other countries, much like T20 has.
Well, I got my fingers crossed for all you cricket fans out there. But now, Aidan, I believe you have some updates about our Aussies at the Olympics.
I sure do. So,
The Source. Piping hot news served fresh to you.
It has been a roller coaster Olympics for Australia so far. We've seen Griffith University's own Emma McKeon become Australia's most successful Olympian in history, securing her sixth career gold medal in the women's 4x100m freestyle relay. We also saw both Ariane Titmus and Callie McEwen both successfully defend their Olympic titles in the pool. But it was in the early hours of this morning when Jessica Fox became Queen of the River, earning gold medals in the kayak and the canoe slalom. Not to mention, we also saw Zach Stubblety-Cook and Kyle Chalmers earn silver in their respective pool events. It wasn't so golden, however, for our Matildas, as they were eliminated following Canada's 1-0 win over Colombia. And of course, more heartbreak for our women's rugby sevens, as they fell to the USA following a last-second try in the bronze medal game. Still, what a fantastic Olympics it has been so far for our golden girls and guys. To our Matildas and Rugby Sevens, you have done Australia so proud. Keep your heads high. Australia now has 7 gold and 16 total medals after day 5, and they sit in 4th place on the leaderboard behind China, France and Japan. Now I'm going to hand it back over to Blake with the weather report.
Thanks, Aidan. Expect mostly sunny skies tomorrow and light southeasterly winds with a high of 21 degrees. Clear skies as well for the rest of the weekend. Saturday will reach a high of 21 degrees. Sunday will also hit 21 degrees with some slight cloud cover. Now to Cooper with the surf report.
Good morning, surfers. Here's your surf forecast for the Gold Coast this coming weekend. On Friday, you can expect big surf, with a dominant swell from the southeast bringing waves of 3 to 4 metres. The wind is expected to be coming from the southeast, and these cross-offshore winds should keep the surf clean, especially around Snapper Rocks and Kira. You can also expect good surf at Burley Heads all throughout Friday. On Saturday, the southeast swell drops a little to 2 metres. There are variable winds early, with a gentle southwesterly breeze taking over at around 10 kilometres an hour as the morning progresses, keeping conditions clean for most of the day, with the wind shifting to the southeast, which could cause some cross-shore conditions in the afternoon. On Sunday, the southeast swell continues to drop to around 1.5 metres. The wind is from the southwest, creating cross-offshore conditions in the morning, shifting around to onshore winds in the afternoon. Enjoy the waves, stay safe, and have a great weekend on the Gold Coast. I'll hand it over to Ben with some entertainment news.
It has been a massive week for entertainment news, so let's get started. Marvel Studios just scored a massive win as Deadpool and Wolverine slashed record after record when its superhero landed into theaters this weekend, grossing a staggering $438 million globally, making it the biggest opening of the year. It's already broken the record for the biggest opening weekend for an R-rated movie, beating out both of its predecessors. It's an important win for Marvel. After a string of middling box office returns over the last couple of years, it's shown that general audiences aren't quite ready to give up on this cinematic universe just yet. Sticking with Marvel news, on Sunday, studio head Kevin Feige announced at Hall H at this year's San Diego Comic-Con that the next Avengers movie will now be titled Avengers Doomsday and will feature the legendary comic book villain Doctor Doom. This has led to the reveal on stage that the recent Oscar winner and former face of the MCU, Robert Downey Jr., will return to play the villainous Victor Von Doom. The announcement led to an equal amount of excitement and controversy, with many fans being disappointed in the announcement, some even going as far as to calling the casting racist. In the comics, Dr. Doom is Romani, and his backstory is linked to the real historical discrimination of Romani people in Europe. This comes after Marvel previously cast Elizabeth Olsen to play the Scarlet Witch, who is also Romani in the comics. Neither Downey Jr. or Olsen are Romani, and it's led to some fans accusing Marvel Studios of whitewashing. However, other fans are excited to see Downey Jr. return and are interested in the implications of the Iron Man actor now playing one of Marvel's most iconic villains. We'll see when Avengers Doomsday releases in theaters in 2026. San Diego Comic-Con came with many other announcements, including a new prequel show for Amazon Prime Video's irreverent superhero satire The Boys, titled Vought Rising. The show will feature Jensen Ackles and Aya Cash reprising their roles as the fan-favorite characters Soldier Boy and Stormfront, respectively. Finally, Michael C. Hall announced that he will return to the Dexter franchise one more time to voice the inner monologue of the serial killer slash detective in the upcoming prequel series, Dexter Original Sin. And that is all for your entertainment news.
Thanks for that, Ben. And that's all we have time for today. On behalf of Blake, Cooper, Ben, and myself, thank you all so much for listening. And make sure you turn into the Source News next week for more news and information produced by Griffith University students.
You're listening to
Source News
on 4EB Community Radio, presented by Griffith University students.